Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, where we discuss the latest AWS news, DevOps trends, and announcements, all sourced from our SweetOps community. Plus, a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's June 4th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. To learn more, just go to cloudposse.com. Now, how can you maximize today's session? First off, our format's very informal. You can engage as much as you'd like and ask questions. And if you're curious about any of our open source tools, like Atmos, this is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, please share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse, where you'll find the recording of today's session. So, with that said, let's discuss today's news. All right. First one, not really DevOps related per se, but I thought it was really cool because if you've ever had to manage a website with localization, it's a real pain. AI has made that a lot easier, and I was kind of blown away that something like this is possible today with literally no code changes, just slight changes to your build process using lingo.dev, an open source project backed by Y Combinator. Any React site can basically become multilingual now, just by modifying the build process. And you can also give it prompts to adjust the voice, so the sound, the way the translation is written has your brand's kind of voice or in the terminology you use. Matt, how easy do you think this would actually be? Like for our, like our marketing site, that means we
I'm
could
not,
basically, cool.
I'm not sure like how well that specifically would work, but there are also other like for the internationalization like formats out there that the standard ones, if you're using some like React has a standard, I think whatever the i8n package or whatever, they have a special like a standard way to do that. And I know that there are AI sites where you send them like the English version of that and then they translate it into a bunch of different languages, but I haven't seen this one that does it like in CI, like on the fly kind of thing. So it's it seems pretty cool.
Next announcement was a GitHub issue that Matt Gowey and I forget who else he was. Malcolm from Terra Team. They were working on this together. A recurring theme for anybody working with Terraform is at a certain point, your root modules get too big for just a traditional plan and apply lifecycle. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of when. If you build infrastructure at the scale that we do at Cloud Posse, when you have 14, 15 accounts at a minimum, VPCs in multiple regions, EKS clusters in all of those, ECS clusters, Lambdas, EKS clusters, obviously you can't stick all of that in one root module. That would be asinine. So you break it apart into smaller pieces. Those pieces we call components, they're basically root modules. Well, something really interesting came out in Terraform in OpenTofu with 1.10, which is that you can do targeted applies with a list of resources, with a file name that has the list of resources. Previously, you literally had to construct every target flag passed to OpenTofu or Terraform with exactly the resources. But now you can codify that in a co in code as a file and pass it to Terraform. So you can kind of get a little bit the best of both. Because what Terraform is really good at is computing the graph and knowing what is affected and replanning and applying those changes. But now Now that that's been shown to work well, what is the next level? How could we bring the concept of like environments or like subsets of related resources of Terraform into some first-class concept? And that's what their proposal is talking about here. Also interesting about this is apparently Mart, formerly of HashiCorp, working on OpenTofu now, was thinking about the same thing and how they could go about implementing that. So if this is something interesting, might be worth chiming in and adding your two cents. Anyone else had a chance to look at this one?
I took a look at it. I think it looked like a much more sophisticated like target, right? So like having a way to group a series of resources together that you could then basically run targeted plans and applies, and presumably it would evolve to dependencies. Or dependent things like also being able to be triggered or something along those lines. So, I mean, they're basically trying to introduce it into the binary itself, right? Rather than what, Atmos like we do and TerraGrunt and all of these other tools have been automating those, those types of smaller root modules, and then orchestrating, being able to plan one of them and dependencies around that. So, I actually welcome seeing it like in like natively in the binary. That would actually be that would be really cool. But this is clearly more and more divergent from Terraform.
But I mean, that's inevitably what has to happen is OpenTofu needs to find its differentiators. And I think there's one area. And like, it's going to do one of two things. It's going to force HashiCorp to make Terraform stacks part of the BSL binary, if you will, of Terraform and not just the Terraform Cloud feature. Or it will, significantly differentiate it as a nice offering. Or they're just waiting for OpenTofu to implement this, and then they make theirs public, and then there's forced like divergence between them with similar functionality. I don't know which way they'll go.
Yeah, I mean they
Yeah,
already mentioned
probably.
that they were going to do this, but basically in Terraform Cloud only, right? Like that's
Yeah, I think
the whole idea.
there's talk that they might some point. They haven't like ruled it out entirely that basic functionality of it could be in the core. To me, I don't understand why they don't do it. I think they should do it. The value add of Terraform Cloud is how they orchestrate, deploy, and manage all of that. But that you can't even express it as code using BSL Terraform, I think is, I don't know why they leave it out of the binary.
Yeah, clearly their product managers disagree with you on the value of Terraform Cloud.
All right. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that this is what the problem that if you don't want to wait for that and you want to start doing this today, you can go to atmos.tools, read about the Atmos mindset and how we have implemented stacks and solved this in a very elegant way using configuration. So it's a framework that helps you do all of this today with stacks. All right, next. Just a minor. Today I learned, or a couple days ago I learned. I didn't realize he had retired. No wonder I haven't heard that much about him lately, or seen him doing a lot of talks. But man, hats off. I don't know how old he is, but 81. He's younger than I am and retired. Darn it, should have started working at Google.
Yeah, just for anyone only listening, that was Kelsey Hightower that you were talking about.
Exactly. That was Kelsey Hightower. Yeah. So he, of Kubernetes Hall of Fame, if you will, very outspoken community evangelist around Kubernetes and all things Google, like developer related.
Yeah, I remember reading, I think very recently before he retired, that he was having sort of a bunch of existential thoughts about the world and where we're going and many of the social movements that were taking place at the time and everything else. And he voiced his opinion on a lot of those, and then shortly thereafter said that he was planning on retiring from Google. So, I don't know. I don't know if they were related or just like the timing of them seems like he was struggling with like life in general. Not like he was struggling, but he was contemplating a lot of things with just like what was important in his life and what he wanted to
Yeah,
spend time
exactly.
on and all of those kinds of things. So, I would fathom a guess that he did pretty well financially while he was at Google, so he probably has some freedom to choose what he wants to do next. But
Yeah.
that's not inside knowledge at all. That's just more of a guess,
No,
given.
and what he says there also somewhere I read there was that if I played my cards right, then Google was my last job ever. was the gist of it.
I
So,
mean, he was there pretty early and pretty long, so presumably those people usually do pretty well.
next one was an interesting project. I think it's been around for some time at this point. Based on the commits, though, I don't see that. I don't know. Anyways, I thought so. Oh, I think I'm thinking of something else. But MicroSandbox is a Docker-like execution environment backed by micro VMs, so full kernels that allows better isolation. This could be interesting now as VM as AI is doing code generation and you don't trust that code as much. That could run now in micro VMs that are fully sandboxed. And it uses OCI, so that's really cool. So you can use the standard Docker-like container image packaging that you're familiar with that's been generalized into standard called OCI, and then run those in a micro VM. What's not clear to me is if you can run like regular Docker, regular OCI images that would work with Docker, for example, in this, or they have to be specifically built for this.
The world comes full circle to Chroot jails.
Well,
I mean, essentially, that's what this is, right? This is like a
no.
fancy
I mean,
version of
this,
that.
but chroot jails is closer to Docker isolation. This is closer to full on VMware, like micro kernels, fully isolated virtual machines. So I don't think the analogy to chroot jails is.
Except they're fully virtualized virtual machines that do run in like on your box, like in some sort of like
Yeah.
jailed environment, basically, so that they can't escape that thing. So
Yeah.
I'm just saying the concept is kind of
The
the
concept,
same.
yeah, it's just it continues, yeah. That was that. All right. Next one was something that I've been totally digging, and it's one of these totally obvious ideas out there. That said, I don't know that I would build a business on it. I have to think this is just gonna become they're gonna finally fix Siri, right? On a Mac, I really hope so because Siri is so bad at transcription of voice. It just messes it up all the time while ChatGPT is like flawless for me.
Yeah, although on your Mac, you know there's actually like a dictation app that is not Siri, that has like a separate thing that is actually much more accurate than Siri.
Oh, I haven't tried to use that one. What are they using behind the scenes on that? Do you know? Or
I don't, but it doesn't nearly have the issues that I mean, it's part of their accessibility suite for like voice control for like
okay.
disabled people. So obviously, they've spent some time making sure that people can voice control their Macs, and you can do a lot of things. And I was using that for a long time, and I've been pretty happy with that. And And then I'm just the last couple of days just trying to kick the tires on Willow to see if it actually is any better, because I saw that you were excited about
Yeah,
it. So
I kept on like, this has got to be in Cursor somewhere. Where's the option? I can't find it. Like, when you're so used to just dictating everything now, like in ChatGPT or elsewhere. So, this is cool. So, the default mapping key is the function key. You can change it to whatever you want, but you basically press the function key. And it doesn't matter what app you're in, it'll start listening and transcribe it and paste the content of that text, formatted as you can see here as well.
yeah, I
So,
think by default you hold the function key down and talk if you want, or you can double tap the function key, talk, and then double tap it again, and it will
oh,
stop
okay. I didn't know about
transcribing.
the double tap,
Yeah.
but yeah.
Because it was annoying me that I had to hold down the function key, so I looked it up. And
You're too long-winded, man.
it, a lot of times that is absolutely true.
I was using this today. I found it really useful. In particular, we have a client who has content behind a firewall, and somebody else needed to read that PDF. So I just read the PDF as fast as I could into the dictation mode, and I think Matt got the idea of what the PDF was saying.
Dan did not say that. About a client of ours. It was hypothetically a client.
To be fair, the thing that he read me was not at all confidential. It was just like a general instruction on how to do something, but it did save us a bunch of time, so I didn't have to like log in and do whatever. Dan was logged in and he was able to read it to me.
Yeah, according to Willow, it said it saved me 5 minutes of typing.
Nice.
Like, wow, you entered over 200 characters in 30 seconds.
Yeah, pretty cool. Actually, on a related note, that makes me think of something else. I don't know when Notion announced it, but we've been using it this week at Cloud Posse. I really dig it. Notion came out with Notion AI last year or something, and our initial exploration with that was pretty good. But to be honest, we did end up, canceling that subscription for a little while. And then they ended up making it bundled with whatever business plan you're in with Notion. So it's included. The thing that I wanted to find is that this, I think, is really new, though. And I don't know how annoying it is for you guys that you get when you got to delegate, like somebody has to take notes for a meeting. And then you're spent taking all that time doing that. We have our architectural review boards at Cloud Posse. Ben always ends up having to take a bunch of notes here. Just picking on you, Ben. But with this, very similar to Willow in the sense like it intercepts your audio from your microphone and is aware of your screen, so you grant it those permissions. If you trust them, of course, and it'll work. Therefore, whether you're using Google Meet, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, Huddles, Slack Huddles, doesn't matter what you're using, so long as the audio is going through your machine, and then it produces really good meeting notes based on what I've seen. Even really long-winded meetings. Like we had one the other day. It was like an hour and a half, and it was the notes were kind of short, and I was like, dude, we were on the call for 1.5 hours, is that all? But yeah,
Well,
that was the gist of it.
it actually transcribes the whole meeting, and then it does an AI summary at the end of what it was. I'm actually running it right now on this call. So,
Oh, cool.
yeah.
Thanks for starting that. I want to see how that is. Yeah, maybe that's part of the SOP for you, Nana. We should show you how to run this so we can get these in there. It'll be good for reference. Then other interesting things is you can then ask it to create new notes based on what was done there. So if you want to write your own custom summary, if you want to maybe write a newsletter, it would be cool to have it. Now, can you just create these in Linear for me? That'd be perfect. These tasks.
Yeah, and then other people can actually also like comment on the meeting note and add their comment, their like suggestions or their input as well, while it's taking notes, and then at the end it can consider that in the summary that
Oh,
that
I
you
didn't
ask
see
it
that.
to add. Yeah.
So this the transcript is real time. It's ongoing. You see it there, so you can comment while the conversation is going.
Yeah, if you want me to share my screen, I could actually show
Yeah,
you
why don't we do
this.
that? That's really cool. So you don't have to necessarily interrupt the person while they're talking, but you can comment on the specific thing they said.
Yeah, so I don't know if you can see right now,
Yeah.
but it's actually doing real-time transcription of everything we're saying. And then if you're in the thing here, you can actually add a note right here and say like, whatever Eric said, said foo, da, 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 da. And then you can actually, you can actually do a bunch of different things here. And then when it writes the transcription at the end, it actually takes your comments into account as well. So, which I think is pretty cool. Oops, I don't know what happened. I just,
I realize it doesn't keep track of the
the who is
who.
saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that might have been why it also wanted the screen capability or screen recording capability, but
Yeah, I thought so, but maybe it's improving. It says it's still beta, so it's
yeah.
probably getting there. So.
But yeah, thank you, Notion, for that. Pretty cool. Let's see if I find my. Yep, there we go. And then we have a Terraform provider for Reddit. Don't ask me why. I guess, Domino's Pizza as a provider was getting old. But you can now curate all your social media on Reddit with Terraform.
All right, can I upvote myself?
Oops. I think it did. So what did it? It did
Run.
support commenting, I think, but I don't remember. Yeah, posting comments, not uploading. Sorry, Matt.
I want better Reddit repudiation. It's gonna run it in on a scheduled GitHub action to just constantly all day upvote me.
Yeah, good luck with that one. The other one, so this was actually announced a couple of weeks ago, but I misunderstood it because there was the other MCP for Terraform that was not official. So HashiCorp actually has their own official MCP server now. It's written in Go. It's licensed MPL, so that's good. And this allows your agents to basically interact with Terraform more intelligently by it feeding them better instructions for how to interact with it. So go on, Matt, you're about to say something?
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say, I checked this out and
Oh,
it
you did?
seems to be really optimized for like searching the registry or finding modules and things like that to do certain pieces, not as much as like deploy this, it doesn't actually have Terraform commands in it. It has like find the provider, give me the docs, give me the details about this module, that kind of thing.
So it's quite similar then to the OpenTofu MCP that we talked about last week. That one being in TypeScript.
Yep.
So
So if
that's
you actually look right, oh, I think it's right there. If you scroll down a little bit, that table available tool sets. So those are the actual things that you can,
Yeah.
the tool is like, yeah, there you go. Resolve provider doc ID, get provider docs, search modules and module details. It doesn't have like plan and deploy or, anything like that.
Yeah.
Or plan and apply, I should say. I don't remember what that.
Presumably, the agents do pretty well with those basic operations or commands with a little guidance. Okay, that's cool. And then, yep.
Sorry, I was just going to say it would be cool if they had it for Terraform Cloud. So you could actually like talk to your Terraform Cloud instance from within your IDE and basically be like, hey, did this deployment already run? Is what version of blah 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 is in this, in this workspace or whatever? Like, so you could query that. I assume they'll iterate on it and get, get a little bit better. But those are the kinds of things that I find myself doing with MCP and tools, these days.
Let's see what the add support for fetching latest server not actually logging. Private registries. And then let's see what's being implemented. Listing organization. Getting somewhere. Listing organizations in Terraform Enterprise. So yeah, it looks like that's old. Assuming this person's part of HashiCorp, looks like that's where it's headed, maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that, and it'll become really useful for people using Terraform Cloud, like when that's available.
So I'm going to skip the next few announcements just because I think it'll flow better to talk about the next one, which was here, which was AWS releasing another MCP. We previously talked about an MCP they had for CloudWatch logs. I think they have at least one other. Now they have one for their containers, the set of their container products. So we're talking Lambda, ECS, and Kubernetes, so that you can therefore accelerate development of services deployed on there, improve, increase, make it easier to debug, and so forth. This got me thinking how interesting this would be as Amazon, like if Amazon could generalize the way they're doing this with what are they using so that all the docs are, so all the API endpoints are automatically generated, Matt.
Like that cloud control thing that they do?
Cloud Control, like
Yeah.
what, yeah, Cloud Control, how Cloud Control's API first, every single feature consistently exposed through Cloud Control. Now they need a Cloud Control MCP, if you will. And then what got me thinking, like, how cool is that now where you could probably, well, when the Terraform MCP gets more mature, combined with an AWS MCP on all the APIs, all of these tools designed to like codify existing infrastructure as Terraform code could now actually probably combine and do it in an agentic manner where you have a lot more control over the code that gets generated.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think that's definitely the direction that we're headed. The one thing that this is all reminding me of is like the chef kitchen and the puppet registry and all those things is there's just now a million MCPs that people have released, and you have no idea to know if they're good, if they're bad, if they do what they're supposed to do, anything like that. It's
Hey, look at this MCP hub.
exactly. And who runs that? Like, it's
exactly.
who, whatever. So there's just, I just feel like where every new tool has, starts with this whole idea of like the user can publish something, and then everything from very good, high quality, well tested, supported by a vendor to an absolute pile of dog crap, gets published in there, and it's really hard to differentiate between them to see like, is this one good or is this one bad?
Anyone write one for us yet? Come on. All right. That's interesting for sure. All right. Back on track then. A mini announcement just showing that there's some consolidation of products happening related to the acquisition of HashiCorp. So Ansible will be in some way coming closer together with Terraform. Obviously, they're very different tools written in totally different languages. So it's not like they're literally combining them, but that there'll be greater interoperation between them. For example, providing having Terraform more natively generate inventories that can be used with Ansible. And this was discussed, I guess, at Ansible Fest.
Personally, all but for a few corner cases, I think using Ansible is an anti-pattern. But
Right.
in general, you should, my opinion, in general, you should build, immutable EC2 in images or Docker images, and you should be deploying those things. You shouldn't be making configuration changes to like running systems on the fly to to do different things. That's a surefire way to end up with with pets rather than cattle out there. And I think that the one corner case or use case that I see for it is in the image generation process. Like if you need to spin up a server and then install a bunch of packages, do a bunch of things on it, and then generate an EC2 image from that, then it makes sense. But in like on a daily basis, I don't think you should be reaching out to running servers to be doing things to them. But that's just a philosophy, I guess, more
Yeah.
than anything else.
Yeah, I kind of follow you on that, Matt. And I think I posted this one. If I didn't, I read it somewhere. Because back in the day, I felt like Terraform had hooks to call providers like Chef and Ansible and Puppet, and they pulled them out. Like it was hooks that you could put into your Terraform as part of the plan and apply process. And so when I saw this, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Are they bringing something back, that maybe had been taken out? I don't know. I mean, I guess they're both under IBM, so it kind of makes sense to pull them together. But I do see the pattern where people will have Ansible code that configures the servers after they're deployed by Terraform. So two separate processes: run your Terraform, build the infra. But they're just vanilla. Whatever it is, servers, containers, well, probably not containers, but servers mostly. And then you have your Ansible process that applies the configuration to these newly deployed servers. So if Terraform can kick out the inventory, I could see that being an input to that particular process. Maybe down the road, yeah, if you are doing Ansible configuration on your running stuff, maybe that's not the best pattern for that, but I do see the place where Terraform builds the thing and then Ansible configures it. Yeah, I think where Matt was probably going is like, why are we not then using like immutable images? But I still see what Michael's saying, because there is sometimes like the, let's say not even the last mile, but the last 100 feet where you still need to update a config file with something, then maybe. I was really sad that, speaking of Kelsey Hightower, he had a really cool project back in the day called Confd that never re that unfortunately was abandoned. But I thought that was the perfect kind of glue service that would run on the server and do the last 100 yard, 100 foot configuration changes on your immutable images.
Yeah, so essentially you're saying like run Ansible in like cloud init, basically, or
Yeah.
something along those lines there. Yeah, I could see that. And I guess I'm not exactly sure. Maybe I guess I don't understand the vision that they're talking about there, but I mean there is already an Ansible provider
Yeah.
for Terraform. So in theory, you should be able to do that last mile thing today by just like kicking off a Terraform run inside your inside your actual image, and running whatever Ansible, whatever it's called, playbook, I
And it's an
think, right?
official provider, so yeah, so I don't really know like what tighter integrations needed.
Unless it's going to be what Michael said, is it have it natively be like supported out of the box to do something like in hooks or something like that, rather than just as a provider infrastructure. But that seems like a bad path to go down in my opinion,
Yeah.
but I
Yeah,
guess it is what it is.
I didn't know that there was an Ansible provider. So that's news to me. I guess what I was referring to there was I forget what it was, but it was like some sort of exec or something, and you call out the exec to your local Ansible or your local Puppet or local Chef or something, and then it does the configuration as part of your Terraform apply. And so I think that was the thing that was kind of
either frowned upon or take it out, or where there might have been something like a direct hook for Chef. I just know this because we used to use Chef on some servers that I managed, and it was part of our process, and I hated it, so it was a mess. I prefer to just build the stuff out and then configure it later. So I've seen that applied much more widely.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, Eric, it's actually the remote exec provisioner that you would want, which
Okay.
basically would let you run remote commands on the infrastructure that you actually just stood up, right? Like then you would be able to run that thing. I think it's called, yeah, the remote exec provisioner, right? Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Last resort, yeah.
Yeah. I agree, but yeah.
All right. Last one that I got here was just a mini announcement on API Gateway. For those in AWS, there are two types of API gateways. REST APIs gateways were the original API gateway, but they were a little bit expressive, a little bit much to configure. And then there were HTTP gateways, which were a lot easier, but not as expressive, and you couldn't get the same things accomplished. And ironically, given that REST API gateways were even more configurable, the one thing you couldn't configure routing was on headers. So this is now possible with the REST API gateway. And this has always been possible, actually, with the HTTP gateway, which couldn't support a lot of the things of the REST gateway. All right. Any
And
other?
they're all supported on
Yeah.
Nginx.
Yeah. They should have just bought Nginx and Neon. I'm really sad that Amazon didn't buy Neon. That should have just replaced RDS Aurora.
Yeah. They have a lot of money. They could have definitely spent the whatever it was.
Yeah, but it wasn't neon.ai the problem. It was neon.tech, and that's why they couldn't buy it.
Yeah.
It seems like that's where all Amazon's money is going now.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, any other announcements this week? Something interesting. Let me check the Zoom chat here. Fireflies. Oh yeah. Yeah, a lot of the AI agent, like, sorry, I'm using the wrong term. The AI record, Michael was saying one thing he likes about Firefly is compared to like Notion AI's note taking is that it does keep track of the speaker. That's obviously though, a native integration with Zoom versus just taking the short path, which is hacking into the microphone itself or jacking into the microphone. Be interesting if they can figure out how they can do that. I think even if they use the screen, it would be optimistic at best because the attendees and speakers aren't always visible on the screen.
Yeah, and you also don't always have the like Zoom window in focus necessarily. Sometimes
Yeah,
you flip
yeah.
back and forth and you're still listening to someone talk.
But it'd be interesting if they did like another optimistic solution, which would be, well, you can still we already added Zoom to Notion, so it can just see if that's the same meeting. Well, I guess it doesn't know that you're on that meeting,
Yeah.
but oh well, good enough for now. All right, Q&A. Michael, what's your question today?
No questions today.
Ah.
I just came through to comment on the link that I posted there, the HashiCorp Ansible and Terraform.
Oh, okay. Okay. Glad we got to that. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Let's see. Any questions? This is the open-ended portion of office hours where you can ask a bunch of bright people what their thoughts are. I don't think I have any
Yeah,
questions.
if nobody's gonna jump in, I mean, I've got topics,
All right,
just
fire
kind of
away.
stuff bouncing around. I ran through a couple discussions on LinkedIn. One was on Git pre-commit hooks for Git,
And I was just wondering what people's thoughts are. The conversation thread that I was in, basically for Terraform, you want to have pre-commit hooks that run your format or validate and that kind of stuff before you push your code. And then someone introduced the idea of having those types of checks done in GitHub or wherever your code is stored itself as part of the a PR process. And I mean, the conversation kind of went back and forth, right? Because people, at least in my opinion, I was on the side of, well, run your pre-commits because then you're not pushing bad code that then requires yet another tool to scan, which may, so if you do push bad code, then here you are, you're going back and forth over this PR. But the flip side of that is not everybody has pre-commit hooks configured. So I don't know, I guess my question would be, as people who work in development teams, do you use pre-commit hooks? And if so, how do you push those pre-commit configurations to everybody's development platform?
I have a lot of thoughts on it, but before I chime in, Matt, do you want to answer?
Yeah. So I don't know if I have the most popular opinion, but I would say you should do both. And the pre-commit hook running on your machine should be a way for developers to get the earliest feedback they can. So first should be in their IDE where you get like, little squiggly, red underlines or yellow underlines for warnings. And then second should be when you try to push a commit, you get, you get a series of things that run for checks and all that and give you feedback right away and stop you from pushing the commit if it's bad. But then your CI process should also recheck those things because the thing that you should absolutely allow is for a developer to skip those if they don't want to run them on their machine for some reason. I often have very valid reasons I don't want to run it, and I still want to push a commit to the server, as an example.
Like you can't back up sometimes. Like if you require it, you can't even push a backup up. So I bypass them for that reason sometimes.
There's definitely reasons for there. And then and if you're an administrator, there might be like you realize you're breaking a rule right now, but there's like an emergency like situation and you're trying to get a service back up and running or something along those lines. And you realize like I need to go back and do X, Y, and Z, or I didn't, I lowered code coverage by 5% by doing what I just did, but I know I did. I just need to get my service back up and running. I don't want to get, stopped from doing what I need to do because we put these rules in. And I want to use my administrator privilege to override that, like as an example. But I think you should do it kind of like defense in depth, right? There, you should have it at each of those layers. To be able to do that. So that's my take on the whole thing. And just answering your question, I think depending on what you're doing, so like Golang has the pre-commit, it's like pre-dash commit, which is a canonical way to do pre-commit hooks and to install them and to run them from remote URLs and do a bunch of other things. So that's one way to do it. And then in the JavaScript, TypeScript, whatever ecosystem, Husky is by far the most popular way to do it. So those are the two that we use when we're doing pre-commit hooks at Cloud Posse. So I'll just answer that and then
Duffy?
I'll give up the floor to anyone else that wants to comment.
Yeah, I'll be brief because Matt basically said most of the points that I was going to say eventually by the end. I'm on a team that all the Node developers use Husky. And then I've been evil and I've embedded pre-scripts into my Terra grunt that install a package called pre-commit that establishes a pre-commit hook that runs, TFSec and Terraform docs and all this sort of stuff. So that by the time the commit makes it up to GitHub, we know docs are up to date and all that sort of stuff. I have had universal in the teams I've been on, universal acceptance and love of this stuff. There hasn't been any pushback And in terms of disabling this stuff, both Husky and pre-commit have very obvious directories that are available in the repository. And so anytime someone needs to really get a commit out and avoid it, it's just a matter of commenting out a line somewhere. And that's
Don't
not.
even need to do that. You can just run git commit dash dash no verify and
Exactly. Well, there we go. Perfect. Thank you. That's a nice tip.
And the only thing I'll add is that you haven't worked on a diverse enough team if you've had universal love and acceptance of pre-commit hooks, because I've definitely over my career experienced many, especially many like senior level engineers that have reasons for loving and or hating pre-commit hooks. So some people, like I even know a guy who said if he was forced to run pre-commit hooks on his workstation all the time, he would quit his job. So he literally was like, I just will not work in that environment. So being able to skip it and then having CI do the checks for you is also, a good backup to that.
The thing I haven't heard mentioned, yeah, I agree with all the above. I think as a default, they should be there, but as a default, they won't run unless you take a sneaky approach like Duffy and have them automatically get installed when you run some command that they are already running. So that makes sense. Have heard complaints about linting and people very opinionated about how linters work, but I think that in the end, it's only way to scale code standards and formatting in a diverse team. So you just gotta, accept it. Ideally, find a linter that also lets you customize how it works, but that's not always possible. But the thing that I really wanted to say though, so yeah, we went through this exercise, this is now a couple of years ago at Cloud Posse as it relates to Terraform with pre-commit hooks and some of our pieces. And yes, it's good. Early feedback is great. One of the quirks that we have is we generate the Terraform, the README automatically based on the README YAML. So that reduces the likelihood that that's out of date. We made a decision to run the pre-commit hooks as part of our GitHub actions. We actually make the official pre-commit GitHub action, I think, is discontinued. So we ended up forking it, I think, and we have it at Cloud Posse and we still use it. However, while I think it is good that we run it also in GitHub Actions as a, to cross our T's and dot our I's, so to say, I don't think it's a substitute for more native GitHub Actions. If you're using Bamboo, right? So it's a little different, I believe, Michael. But on GitHub, I really don't like pre-commit GitHub Actions. When you can run native GitHub Actions that support annotations or serif format, and then you get the line level comments of where the problem is. Because what I really hate doing is having to sift through build logs and figure out why it failed and find the file and the line number, go to my editor, open it up, and do that when I could just look at the PR and see exactly the line that's not passing.
Yeah, I don't. Hopefully, you weren't misconstruing what I was saying. I wasn't suggesting running pre-commit itself in GitHub Actions. I was just saying the things that you want to check should be checked in both places. So, if you want to run your tests, you should run your tests in your CI pipeline as well. If you want to check formatting, you should do that in there. I'm not suggesting pre-commit hooks are the way to do it in both locations. I'm just saying
I misunderstood.
you should check it in both places. The only thing that I would say is make sure you're using the same configuration files in both. Otherwise, it's really frustrating as a developer where you run something locally and then you submit it and then the CI pipeline rejects it because the formatting is slightly different in the CI pipeline or something like that. And
You're an infinite loop trying to fix that as well.
yeah, it is impossible at that point. So, yeah, so then you end up having to do no verify and letting the CI pipeline take care of like fixing it or whatever. But yeah, anyway, I wasn't suggesting that.
Yeah, I'm on the best of both worlds camp where you should be doing stuff locally, you should do stuff in CI. And yes, they should be linked so that the configuration is absolutely the same. I think by default, like Git hooks are not versioned. So that's the hardest part, right? If you have a widely distributed team, then distributing those hooks and having them in the right place may be difficult. But if you have tools that you can configure as a part of your code base, Dagger is one that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head. I haven't used it, but it runs locally, same as it does in CI. And I mean that could be an option for some sort of pre-commit style hook, but yeah, and I guess that was kind of like the root of my question because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the hooks directory, and I forget the name of it right off the top of my head,
Hooks.
it's not, it's literally hooks, right? Like the content of that directory is not versioned with the